We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end...
What will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
Yeah. So hopefully people join. All right. Let me do... I got an intro. We'll do that, and then we'll be right back. All right, welcome to this early, very early edition of Rat Sad Review. Usually we're not on until Wednesday nights at 8 o'clock p.m., but we are on at 11 a.m.
Yes, and you can tell because I have a paper cup of coffee today.
It's very early for you.
It is very early over here for us, but hey, I'll wake up as early as possible to have Roland Grapow on Rat Sad Review. Welcome to the show, Roland.
Guten Tag, Herr Grapow. How are you?
Yeah. I'm in sport outfit, but I'm not so much into sport.
No worries.
No problem. Actually, we are here to talk about the, this isn't the 20th anniversary of the album, this is the original one, but you're here to talk about the 20th anniversary of the debut album of Master Plan. And talk to me about, like, you were with Helloween for a very long time, and Helloween is my favorite band. Everybody knows that on the show. Everybody makes fun of me because all I talk about is Helloween.
but in his defense, my favorite album of all time from Helloween is, to this day, The Time of the Oath. So we're both huge fans.
Cool. So everybody's different, the favorite.
Yeah. Well, there's so many albums to choose. But you did The Dark Ride, and it was a very dark album for Helloween and a very different band. And then, you know, you guys left. I don't know. Did you leave Helloween, or did they let you go, or how did that end?
Yeah, we had a lot of trouble at that time before the album, already like 6 months before started. Mm. And then we were touring for this album for 1 year, and then we were fired. So it was 2001 in August, I think August 5th.
All right. So then you were fired from Helloween, and then you got a band together with Uli. And were any of these songs going to be for Helloween at some point, or maybe for The Dark Ride, or maybe for even the next album? Or how did these songs come about?
No, there were many, many parts, and maybe two songs were meant to be for The Dark Ride. Mm. So one was Step Into the Light, which had a different name at that time. Mm. We recorded already drums, my guitars and bass for this song, but nobody was singing on it. So just the pre-production vocals were on from Henne Basse, which was a friend of Uli Kusch. You know, he's a singer. He was in Firewind and many other bands, Metallium.
Yeah.
And he's also a friend of mine. So we know him. He lives in Lüneburg, but at the time when I was in Hamburg living, we saw each other many times. And so this was a pre-production mixed with recordings already. And then some parts were already like from Soulburn, the intro part, and the verses were also played to the band, but we never finished this song. Mm. And so when we started a new band, then I had the idea for the chorus part and solo part. So there was good teamwork after that. But maybe some other parts, not from me, but from Uli, maybe some small parts were meant to be for Helloween, but not new material for the next album we didn't have.
Yeah. Oh, cool. Now, were you in talks about doing a band together at some point when you were still in Helloween? Because you actually worked on your first solo album with Uli. So was there any talks about maybe doing something on the side?
Yeah, exactly. We were touring, and Uli was a bit disappointed that so many good parts were left from the Dark Ride session. And then he thought, maybe I should do a solo album, like naive on a tour bus, driving, drinking beer. And we were always sitting, at that time he was a non-smoker, and we were sitting in front of the tour bus and the rest in the back, smoking all the time. And so we talked a lot about this idea, and we were listening to, like from record labels, we had a lot of, in magazines, this kind of promotion CDs, you know, on the tour bus listening. And it's nice when you have so much time, you know, and you can listen to some fresh new bands. And at that time was the ARC album came out with Jørn Lande on. Okay. And of course we fell in love with his voice, and we remembered him later when we had the, and so at that time we were talking about, I said, Uli, I want also to do another one, but not this neoclassical again. You know, I did two. And I was a bit tired about it, and I felt in love with the Dark Ride recordings, with the idea. And then I said, maybe we should do something together. And then he loved the idea. And then we were thinking about maybe let's think about a singer. And then we were thinking about Russell Allen from CDX. And this idea we had, very rough, just talking, blah, blah, blah. And then we talked to the other guys in the band, and I think they didn't like it. And without telling us they didn't like it, they fired us after 1 year after the tour.
Wow.
Because we said, we try to get now our solo work is fine. Nobody said no. Mm. You know, kind of really surprised when we were fired. It was like hugging each other on the airport after the last festival. And I said, see you soon for the next writing of the next Halloween album. And then at home, the email came. That's it, you know.
Oh, my God. Wow.
So then we thought, okay, we have to make this idea even more professional. It was right. Not really meant to be a really serious project. Just like
emails. Solo.
Yeah. Anyway, that was the start of the band. And at that time, we had already maybe 70% written, you know.
Mm.
Russell Allen came to the... I was flying after the last show to Los Angeles to meet Roy Z and talking about the material, if he could help me. And he was like a friend to me, you know, after the Dark Ride, we kept friendship.
Yeah.
And at that time, I was, I think, 1 week in Los Angeles at his place. And then Russell Allen came. I paid a flight for him to meet me and also Roy. And then he heard the pre-production. And at that time, he was already singing some rough ideas on each song we had at that time, you know.
Right.
And there was no lyrics, it was just listen to this, and then he was immediately singing something, and everything was so inspiring, and he's really good, really good professional.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah, but then it didn't work out, because 2 weeks later I asked him if he would join us, because we needed to form a new band, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to have a project, we needed a band, on our own singer. And he said, no, I can't do it then, you know. And then it was sad. And that's how it started. And we thought about the next singer, which could be maybe Mikey Kiske. I asked him as well. He said no.
Really?
He was into metal in that time.
Yeah.
And but he agreed to sing maybe one song, like a duet with our future singer.
Mm-hmm.
And then we started thinking about Jørn Lande, because we liked him so much on the ARC album, on the tour bus listening session, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how it started. It was very quick. So from August to October, we started recording already in October. So all the songs were written in the next 6 weeks.
Oh, wow. That's pretty cool.
Especially Kind Hearted Light, I was writing at that time, Heroes. And the rest, I think Uli had one more song after mm-hmm. after 9/11 happening at that September time, at that period.
All right.
And he had some song. I don't know which one it was. Maybe... have to lie, maybe Crawling from Hell. I don't know which one. So, but we were quick in October. You know, I met Andy Sleep already a couple of months before on a festival in England, and I just contacted him. I liked his production and his kind of attitude, and so he agreed to record everything in my studio in Hamburg. And then in October we started with drums, and then slowly with guitars and bass. Bass was trouble because we couldn't find a right bass player.
Mm-hmm.
So on the end, I played 90% of the album.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. That's how it started.
Wow, really cool. I had no idea Russell Allen was involved. What's that?
Was it the question? I'm answering so much.
Well, you can take over the show. Go ahead.
we'll keep our mouths shut, please.
But it's funny that you've had Russell Allen in mind, because actually Russell Allen and Bjorn Land got together and did do their Russell Allen thing. So that's pretty cool.
It came later, and later the same with Bjorn and Avantasia. You know, it's kind of weird. You know.
Yeah. So how did you get in touch with Bjorn? Did he immediately love the project, or did it take him some talking to?
I think we started in September to search, and even with in mind that we were recording starting already in October, we didn't have a singer. But we knew the arrangement was done. We had really strong feelings for the material already without vocal. And then, so I tried in September slowly contacting him in a way. But where? I tried record labels. I couldn't find anything except the French label. I forgot the name, the guy. He had his label. Arc was on that label as well. So I was a bit in friendship with him at that time. It was like 20 years ago. And then he said, you can't get in contact with him. He's not answering anything, even when you have a number. So the only chance was his ex-girlfriend. Now it's his wife. At that time, it was his girlfriend. And Christine London now. And I got in contact. I don't know if it was a telephone number, or there was no Facebook at that time, nothing.
Right.
And so I contacted her, and she promised me that he would call me back, and he did. But it took a couple of weeks. So it was end of November that finally I had contact, you know?
Yeah.
And Jörn agreed, yeah, I'm interested. Oh, let me listen. Send me some stuff. I said, no, I don't send you our songs. They're not protected. I said, come to Hamburg. I pay for the flight. And he came. It was like one day, and he came around 9 in the morning, 10 in the morning. We were Uli Kusch, me, Andy Sneap sitting there. And he listened to all the songs. We played it to him like for 2-3 hours. We had 16 song material, roughly. On the end, he said, yeah, I'm interested. Sounds really nice, and I like it somehow. So maybe I can take this stuff with me and write some lyrics, because I wrote already lyrics for Heroes, Ceylon, Kind Hearted Light. One more, I forgot. Four songs. What's the song? Crystal Night.
There you go.
So these songs I wrote already. They've finished the lyrics, and the rest he made till end of January. So in that meeting, I asked him, we were quite finished already, 2 o'clock something, his flight was 5-6, and I said, do you have time to maybe sing one song? He said, yeah, which one? Yeah, we have one label asking us to make the new band Master Plan could have a song for the Led Zeppelin, like a cover song, you know. So we did Black Dog. Already recording, it was done without vocals, and he made just 2 runs, like listening, singing one, second, done. It was amazing how good he was singing on that day, and so we had already one song at the first meeting recorded with him. It was amazing.
Wow, very cool. Yeah, he's an awesome singer. He's one of my top favorite singers, and I actually had him on a show maybe about 2 or 3 years ago. And he's a talker too. We talked for like actually 2 days, because he had to do something and we had to end the conversation. But it was like almost a 4-hour conversation. And we just talked about everything, and he can talk. Very cool guy.
Amazing.
Yeah. Go ahead, Lou. I don't want to take up all the stuff.
Well, I mean, it's good to see you back in the public eye, because, I admit I was late to the game in discovering Helloween, as I told Wayne that my exposure to the band was when Metal Jukebox first got serviced to college radio. So we're talking 1999, and that was the only album ever. And Wayne scolded me because he said, how dare you let your first Helloween album be an all covers album? And he told me, go listen to the rest of it. And I did, and fell in love with it. And I have to admit, your songwriting and your playing, I have to admit, for me, I found very inspirational. When I saw the videos that were done, when I saw the video for Kids of the Century, and I saw, wait a minute, he's playing power metal with a Fender Stratocaster.
Yep.
Because of that, I now have 2 modified Fender Stratocasters. To you. So, I have to give you all that credit. But what I wanted to ask you, being a guitar player and being a gearhead. So sorry, Wayne, the gear questions come in right now. What made you at the time decide that you wanted to do, you wanted to play with Fender Stratocasters when you first joined Helloween? And I know now you're playing a gorgeous Gibson Les Paul, with a maple neck, which is very rare, unless I'm mistaken, and it's roasted maple. But either way, it's like, you know, what made you decide to go with Fender Stratocasters originally, and what made you decide to switch to Gibsons?
Ooh, it's hard to say. It was a slow progress. In the beginning, the first tour, when I was stepping in for Kai Hansen, we went 89 to America with this Anthrax and Exodus playing these festival shows there. I don't remember how many, but it was like a long time, 6 weeks I was in America. And I played still BC Rich. So I was BC Rich and Engel amplifier I was playing, this German company, but very old model. I don't remember the name. And when I hear now the material, there's some good recordings from Japan. Right after America, we went to Japan, and I liked the sound. The sound was absolutely fine. And I was already, after the tour, crazy, and I made scalloped onto the necks for my guitar builder in Hamburg. But slowly, I fell in love with the Strat. I mean, I was always a big fan of Richie Blackmore, especially when he had a good sound, like made in Japan, or Fireball, this Machine Head era. I love this kind of Strat sound, this warm, sustainy, you know, which is really hard to get with this guitar, to be honest, if you don't know how to do it. And of course,
true words ever spoken. Continue.
Yeah, and then of course, I fell in love at that time with many guitar players. I wanted to learn something. I wanted to be better, and I fell in love with Yngwie Malmsteen, and especially his very old sound is the same. You know, before he, like Alcatraz, and even before, This is my favorite sound he has. You know, and then later I said, "What's going on? Why it changed?" You know, somehow. Anyway, I still loved it. I had many, many videos of him at that time, VHS learning videos. He showed some tricks, and I tried to learn everything, and I loved it somehow. You know, I was a bit addicted. And this kind of Stratocaster, you know, the sound was not easy to get in the beginning, because I needed to get this pedal, what he used as well, the DOD 250. And I found it in America after mixing the Chameleon album. So when I found this pedal, then the sound was getting closer to his style. And for me, it was easier to play. And it's very inspirational. You play different on a Stratocaster, especially when I have scallop and this kind of boosted pedal. And the Marshall, I always played on 10. I didn't get any sound less than 10 on volume. I had a little modification, which is not really a modification. I had a send return built in, which had an active extra tube and a volume knob. So this kind of power amp boosting I did extra, you know, I put a cable just linking in and out and boosted this extra, which made like the power amp a little bit dying sounding, you know. I remember when I played so loud that my cabinets, mostly I played backwards because everybody was complaining how loud I was. And then I remember there was an Italian festival and Gamma Ray was there, and Kai Hansen came to me. Man, your cabinet sounding like the speakers are dying. It's like, you know. But somehow I liked it, especially the solo sound, you know. But for rhythm, sometimes I felt, maybe I'm on the edge, on the end, you know. That's how it started, and I fell in love with it. And when we started Dark Ride, you know, maybe I made one or two songs all the albums I made with the Les Paul. I remember Still We Go, I was learning about more harmony guitars, and I was inspired a bit. I'm not a big fan of Steve Vai, but I liked his kind of harmony playing, and like Brian May had and Queen, many, many parts. And I was learning, I had some lessons from a really great guitar player from Hamburg. His name is Roland Cabezas, which is a Spanish name, except Roland. And he's a great guy, and he showed me in 2 months how to think about it. I was really autodidact. I didn't know anything about theory. But this made a big step for me. And since then, I feel so secure about making harmonies also for Masterplan. And when I did Still We Go, I played a Les Paul. So nobody knows. And everybody thinks it's a Strat. You know?
That's what they saw you with all the time. So yeah.
But live I loved always this how it looks like, how the felt. It's a pretty light guitar, you know. And then I think many people liked the sound of the band, that I had a Stratocaster and then the Gibson kind of like a Weicker style. And it fits nice together. People are still missing it. Many people write me about, especially the Fender sound I have and the Halloween sound.
Yeah.
But then we had a meeting before the Dark Ride, and then the band said they don't like my sound.
Oh, jeez, man.
They said, why you always try to sound like Yngwie and this and that? And then Weicke told me, I love you, how you played in Rampage, more melodic, like Michael Schenker. With Gibson, had an Explorer at that time from Ibanez, and later Gibson. And so, I don't know, I changed. And Dark Rider fell in love with a kind of, I had many talks with Roy Z about guitar sound, especially the new down-tuned tuning trick we did. I used my Les Paul. Every song on this album is played by my Les Paul, the down-tuned part. And then I asked my old friend in Hamburg to give me my Flying V back, which you see on the If I Could Fly video.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful Flying V from 1981, which I sold again. I'm regretted it again. So this I played, I think, 60% of all the solo parts. And for the faster stuff on Dark Ride or some other parts, I don't remember all the names anymore, but then I played Fender again, you know, because I feel more comfortable and I can play different, like Apache or something. And, and then when we started the master plan, I just kept it, you know, the Gibson kind of sound. Downtuned is just one song, to be honest, the Bleeding Eyes. And then we had many drop D tuning, but I felt in love with the Gibson kind of sound, with a Les Paul especially. And I don't want to mix it on the Fender, with the Fender sounding thinner, you know, for Rhythm, at least. That's how it started.
Now, the pickups on the Strats that you were using, were they stacked, meaning that were they single coils that were taller than usual? Because, you know, the problem that guitar players face with single coils is always that 50 cycle hum that occurs whenever you're in a hot light, and it just keeps buzzing and buzzing and buzzing and drives you absolutely crazy. But what I loved about it was that it was a crisp and clean tone and just really cut through. So I'm wondering if your pickups were stacked.
Yeah, I used a DiMarzio HS3, like, same like Yngwie. So it's a humbucker, basically, and a Stratocaster, you know, kind of style.
That's the secret, Wayne.
But I never tried really for this sound real single coils, to be honest. It doesn't fit with a treble booster. I love the strong normal single coil for bluesy sounds, you know, for clean sounds.
Yes.
Especially on music, I use real, you know, single coils direct in a SSL mixing board. So I never used any amp for this part. It sounded much better and direct, you know. But also on the Chameleon album, we felt, especially Mikey Kiske and me, we felt in love with Stevie Ray Vaughan. And I was listening, and all the time, this kind of live in Mocambo Club, or what the name is. This video is amazing. And so he used normal Strat pickups. And so I have also my 62 Strat, which I used only on one tour on Halloween. I don't use it live anymore. And I have Texas Special inside. So I love the normal single coils, to be honest. Especially when you have tried to get this old Hendrix sound, or my other favorite guitar player, Uli John Ross, the Scorpion years. You know, when he had a Fats phase and what else he had? Yeah, Wow was Fats phase. And so this is kind
maybe
of
Echoplex. Was it Echoplex or Delay that he had?
Yeah, he had a Japanese version. He had a Roland.
Okay.
So he was boosting a sound with a Roland preamp. And that's what he told me. I said, which kind of booster or what do you use? I didn't use anything. You know, that's kind of it. All the old guys doesn't say about their tricks, you know, same, you know, like others. But if you search long enough, you find it, you know, on pictures or something. You know, they use a lot of kind of echo part, like Vam Copycat for boosting the old marshals and stuff like that. And so then I like the single coils better for this kind of sound, you know. There's not one trick pony or how you call it, you know. As it's always, you have to, you know, have some humbucker Fender Strats, you know, for the Eddie Van Halen part. I think this kind of HS3, I have just three Strats. All in all, I have just six or seven. Mm-hmm. I had, at that time in Halloween, I had, I don't know, 20, 30.
Jeez.
But you mentioned the treble booster. I did not know that so many guitar players in the 70s use a treble booster. I didn't realize that Tony Iommi used them, and now you're telling me Uli John Roth used them. And by accident, I mean, I use an MXR booster, and you know, I have to admit, as someone who relied on a compression pedal for the longest time, I'd have to say I think the treble booster definitely adds more depth to the tone. So yeah, I could agree with that.
Yeah, Richard Blackmore had this kind of Home by Skews, which is a copy of Rangemaster. I found all these kind of tricks very late in the beginning of 90s. And then I contacted people and I was searching for the treble booster. And at that time already, I found one in Japan for €800. I said, what? This, the parts inside is just for 10, 20 cents, you know? It's right. Nothing. And now, if you find one, maybe you pay $3,000, you know. And I was crazy about that sound stuff in that time, you know, especially the Brian May sound. Brian May used the Rangemaster.
Yes.
The blues player from England, oh God, Rory Gallagher. So he was inspiring Brian May with his sound. He used mm-hmm. the same amp, the same booster. So he asked him. Then Rory Gallagher was recording in Dirk's studio in Germany. And I heard that George Lynch on the first album he recorded there used also the treble booster because it was owned by Dieter Dirks. All these kind of tricks, you know, nobody knows about it. Nobody talks really about it. Wolf Hoffmann used Rangemaster on the old Accept albums. Maybe he's still using it, you know. Hmm. And so many people.
Well, I'm a budget...
Only John Ross didn't use it. You misunderstood me. So he had just a boosting of the Roland Echo part.
Oh, that's what it was. Okay. I guess I'm sorry. I did misunderstand. But that, you know what? That's the thing. Guitar players, we're always searching for the right tone, even if it breaks us financially.
Being like in this new digital age, are you into like all those plugins and stuff? Because you mix and do your own recording too. So are you into all that stuff?
Yeah, I felt in this trap. Yeah, so everything came out the last 3 years. You have to try, and then you buy it, and then you see the videos, you know, which sounding always incredible. And when I have it downloaded and bought it, I said, that doesn't sound so good like I thought. You know? Basically, I'm using my Camper in the moment with a good sound I got from Andy Sneap. He gave me some profiles. And I fell in love with it. He gave it to me already 6-8 years ago. Mm. But sometimes I try, and when I'm mixing a band for cheap money, then, you know, I don't reamp. I just use a DI signal. Mm. And but my favorite plugin is really an old one. I think it's TSA Audio or something. It's like it's made in Russia. It's like XXS50 or something. It's a plugin which emulates a PV5150. And for me, it sounds the best, you know, right, so far. But no updates already. This guy's, I don't think, in business anymore. So there's no updates. And I'm happy it still works on my new computer. But the new stuff is all good, you know, STL or whatever the other companies.
Yeah.
You know, Borgren. And I bought so many and I regret it. You know, I'm always buying too many plugins.
Now, when you play live, do you use like a computer to get those sounds, or you still use your regular equipment?
Yeah, are you familiar with the Fractal Audio, the Axis, or anything like that?
Yeah, I had customers in my studio using it, but no, people mostly get away and then went to the Camper side, you know. I don't know why, but I never tried it. No. And live, yeah, once I had the Camper on stage, and it was 10 years ago when I had it new. And the band didn't like it. and I didn't like it. Something I made wrong, maybe, I don't know. It was a festival with no sound check, and I took it on an amp and no time to connect everything and tell what I wanted. I said, don't do it again. So I'm using mostly, when we do festivals, I ask for PV50 from 5150 or the Fender version, Eddie Van Halen version. And my old favorites are Mesa Boogie rectifiers, dual or triple. And so sometimes, like, if there's a compromise, there's this Polish company, La Boga Hector, which is very good. So one of these amps I will always get on the festival. The worst case, only once in 10 years or twice, I got just a Marshall and I couldn't get my master plan set. Because Marshall is mid-rangey sounding. And when I play this Enlighten Me, kind of da-da-da-da-da, it stops, you know?
Yeah.
It sounds like very thin and it's not inspiring, you know?
Right.
But for Fender and this old, older sound, I call it Halloween sound. I love Marshall for that, you know. And sometimes I'm blending it for solo overdub parts. I'm blending modern amps with the mid-range of a Marshall, and it's a kind of trick which really fits well, you know, works well.
Very cool. You mentioned this band before, Rampage. Tell me
about. Oh, you have it.
I have these two. Yes, I had to search high and low for these things.
You see that CD behind there? Yeah, he has it. He has it. Just letting you know that, Roland.
There's people got more stuff than me.
All right.
tell me about like that Rampage band. Like what was going on with that band?
Yeah, so we were very young. I mean, I think when I was 17, I met these guys. Some of them, they had a. I think they're 1 year older than me, both the guitar player and the bass player. The bass player was the boss. His name is, don't ask me. Carsten Heyer was a guitar player, and Jörg Schädlich was a bass player and singer. We were all singers, to be honest. We had each solo spot, and we were very good in harmonies. And so I met them, and I saw them in a concert in the band of them called Bruchgefahr, which means... you normally get a sticker on your luggage or something. It's breakable, called breakable.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
And in Germany it's called Bruchgefahr, and a stupid name, but I think they got these stickers for free. That's why they had it everywhere. And I felt in love with this guy. They had a good energy, and the bass player, York, had at that time really long blonde hair like Mark Farner of Grand Funk. And I was, this is cool, you know. Imagine this was middle of the 70s, and there was not really big scene in Hamburg. And the other guy also had long hair, and he had already this kind of beard, like looking like a rock star, you know, this kind of this side, I don't know in English what the name is, side ones, you know, with a mustache. And and also he was really good in English and everything. And I found out later he says one of his parents are from England. And that's why his name Heyer, you know, Carsten Heyer. So it was, and anyway, I met them later, and then they heard me playing, and they felt in love with my guitar sound. And then we started like 1 or 2 years later after this, when we were around 18, 19, playing together and creating Rampage. Mm-hmm. So they had a drummer, the friend of Carsten Heyer. And problem was we wanted to be... We were already inspired by Saxon, and Judas Priest was already big at that time, 79, you know, and Scorpions, of course. And so we thought maybe we can do something like Saxon, Judas Priest, and then, but more melodic, like with harmony vocals, like Journey and Styx. That's the other side we loved, you know, Total, Foreigner, all this stuff. And said, okay, let's do this. And that's how naive we started, you know. And we found really quick a record deal, and some the studio guys who recorded us, they said, oh man, we can produce you and we can work together for the future. And they saw the potential somehow, and we got a record deal through them by Teldec Records, and we signed some contracts with them, and I never got Gamer, never got money, and typical story, you know, and. It was kind of challenging. We felt already like little stars, you know. We had a record deal, and then we started slowly working on the second album, and everything looked fine. But somehow I felt not comfortable anymore. I felt like this was not an equal band anymore. The bass player, the band leader, was getting too powerful. He went as a job beside, he finished studying and he went to the police and cut it his hair short. And through him, we had a TV kind of 45-minute spot called Between Rock and Police, you know, like a policeman, the kind of interest, the conflict in the 70s. Now it's no problem. You know, now you have tattoos, you have long hair. But at that time, he needed to fix his teeth, short hair, no earrings. He had already earrings at daytime. And no tattoos at that time. And that's why we made this. And then that was quite nice. So we got a little bit famous in Germany. And but then I felt uncomfortable. I left the band already at the mixing mastering process after finishing. And we had a photo session. And on this photo session was already the new singer which was replacing me and the new guitar player.
Oh, nice.
And I said, the guitar player is not on the picture, but the singer. I said, well, why is he on the picture? He didn't even play.
Right.
And so after I left, after the photo session, and they recorded one more song for this album. And this was the new singer, and the guitar players and asked me, I'm really bad with names, but I feel ashamed of them. I don't remember. But the
you're doing all right so far.
From Gamma Ray.
Oh, yeah. I know
Henio,
who you're talking about.
Richter,
Yes.
So he was replacing me and this singer. So they needed two guys who replaced me.
Wow.
Anyway, and they played not long. I think one more year, and so make this, I'm talking too much. But the story.
That's why you're here. Keep going.
The singer and bass player was getting frustrated because his marriage was breaking up. Then he was fired by the police. Then I think he regretted that I left the band and everything went worse. He was getting alcoholic and really heavy. And after 3 years, he made suicide.
Oh, really?
And, oh.
He was just 24, 25.
Wow. And,
that's a downer.
And the same year, or maybe next year, 26, Carsten Heyer was dying as well. So he had too much alcohol consume, and you got this, what's the name, gastritis in Germany. So the stomach fucked up from too heavy, like whiskey stuff, and, you know, not beer. He was drinking whiskey a lot. Also in that early age, it's crazy.
Yeah, yeah. What is going on on this picture here with the little baby and everything?
Yeah, so the baby is the baby from the bass player. So,
oh, okay.
All right. So he was still happy at that time.
Yeah. I thought the baby was the mastermind behind the rampage, just throwing everything around the room.
He just wanted to this sort of a cool idea to have a baby. Then I said, it's not cool. Do you see my face? I was like,
yeah.
Really? Wayne, that's not as bad as some of the 70s Scorpions covers. I can tell you that.
There's worse. Yes, there's.
This is a very innocent picture of a baby.
I remember the baby called Sarah. That was his daughter. And after the divorcement, she went, his ex was a baby to South America. So really sad.
I don't want to keep it on a sad topic, but you were in the band when Ingo was still in the band. What was that like, being with Ingo, like towards the end of his life, pretty much? What was going on with the band and him?
It's hard to explain, because when I joined the band, I felt there's something between us, and in a way of distance, you know, like I'm very easygoing, and I have a sense, really strange sense of humor, like English humor, like sarcasm, you know. And you know, we knew us just 2-3 months, and we went on tour already, you know, and felt a lot of pressure on me, not because of replacing Kai, because I didn't know Helloween before. And 6 months before, I was contacted by Wyke, and he played me the stuff, and I said, yeah, I like it. But he played me just the soft songs, you know?
Right.
Like the ballad and Future World and I Want Out, that's it. And
okay.
And the stuff, the other stuff I heard later. But he said, here's material, learn it, and then Christmas you will join the band. So I will take care about it. I said, but he's still in the band, you're touring still in Europe. anyway, and then when I came and felt who really didn't like the situation was Ingo, because he was the biggest friend of Kai.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they had a lot of private time together as well. And yeah, so I tried to get always very close to him, but it was not easy. And on tour, I always tried to talk to him. And I said, what's going on? Why I can't get... Everybody liked me there, you know? No problem. With Michael Kiske or Wiki, we had a lot of talks. And but then I realized 2-3 years later that he's sick. You know, he had this kind of schizophrenia, and that he started, you know, crying on stage in Japan. It started like we had to interrupt the concert in the middle. Mm-hmm. And well, what's going on? And then we finally found out what's going on. And then he had a break from the band for another year. And we gave him like 1 year for getting treatments. And we went on tour with other drummer like Richie Abdelnaby,
mm-hmm.
which was a nice guy as well, really nice. And anyway, there was this time when the year was over, and then he came to me in my house and he said, yeah, I'm fine again. I'm totally fine. You know, he had short hair. He had a big beard.
Really?
And, wow. Yeah, he looked totally different. And then I said, also, he gained weight, maybe from medicine or medication or something. I don't know.
Mm.
And but then I said, okay, I will talk to the other guy. But I was not the main guy in the band. I don't know why he came to me, you know.
Mm.
Anyway, I felt he was not better. He talked fine for 30 minutes, and then the next part, one answer of my question was like, what's going on with him? Yeah. You know, I was like, oh my God, nothing changed.
Yeah.
Anyway, so it's like sad situation at that time. You know?
Yeah.
And always people are writing, he's Mr. Smile, but he's just smiling on the pictures and when the camera was there, but he was not always smiling.
Right, you know? Right. Yeah,
that's why I had a different or hard time with him, you know. And for me, it was easier to hang out with Mikey Kiske and Wiki and Marcus. Yeah,
definitely.
And also, I didn't take drugs, and that's why I was bored. I was a boring guy, you know. I think that's how he saw me. You know, I like to drink a beer. That's it. And but I heard that he took some stuff which I never saw. You know.
Right.
But I was driving him sometimes after the rehearsal to a part where he was meeting the people and buying stuff. And I didn't know what it was, but I heard this about later.
Mm.
So, well, there was happening.
Yeah, that song Step Out of Hell was kind of, I guess, written for him in a way, right?
Yeah, this is kind of a Rampage song, which I reactivated. Oh,
that's right. Yes. Yeah. Actually, you had a couple of songs from Rampage. You had that and what's the other one? Yes, yeah. Yes.
Yeah, so I thought I write this kind of lyrics about him, and because it was Victims of Rock, the name was before on the Rampage,
mm-hmm.
and Step Out of Hell, I was writing about his situation, and I hoped I could help him with this kind of message, but yeah, didn't work.
Hmm. Nah. That's a shame. Richie, you mentioned Richie. Did he actually record on any songs or anything with you guys, like any B-sides or?
Yeah, B-sides. Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know the names, but my song was Oriental Journey, instrumental
okay.
song.
Oh, that was Richie on the drums. Oh, okay. Yeah.
And he did some all the bonus tracks for this period, I guess. Yeah.
Oh, very cool. What do you think about those the Pink Bubbles Go Ape and the Chameleon album? To me, I love them. The fans are they're really split on those two albums. What?
I wasn't crazy about them either at first when I heard them, because again, when you're listening to the albums in sequence and you go from Walls of Jericho to Keepers to Pink Bubbles and Chameleon, you're like, is this the same band? But I can say, going back to it at a later time and realizing these are some of the best songs that the band has ever recorded in their entire career. I mean, I don't think I can make a playlist that includes Halloween or Master Plan without including The Chance or Mankind or Step Out of Hell or anything like that. So, sorry, Wayne, going back to your question. No, ask the question.
He knows where
it was a tough situation at the time. You know, I just didn't understand it as well. You know, I joined the band We played live all the good stuff from Keeper 1 and 2. And as an encore, we had, you know, from Walls of Jericho, is I don't even remember the name, but one song, you know.
Oh, and, How Many Tears, usually.
How Many Tears, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so I thought, let's write songs. I mean, it was a delay of some problems with a record label we had at that time before Pink Bubbles came out. So I wrote then, first song was A Chance I wrote, then I think Someone's Crying, and then Mankind, and Back on the Street was a kind of Rampage song already, which was not sure if it's on the Rampage album, but I like this riff. It was from Kai and Carsten Heyer, and I said, okay, I write here some heavy metal. I try to replace a guy who wrote a couple of cool songs there, and then a few. What's going on with Wyke and Michael Wykers? So there was, people doesn't know, but for this album was already a Windmill written on this, for which is later on Chameleon.
Oh, really?
And, yeah, we had three versions out of it.
Really?
And, yeah. I still have it somewhere here. And
you'll have to send it to me.
Pay up, Wayne. Inflation.
And then I had, of course, at that time I started speaking English quite okay, you know, after some years. And I was talking with Chris Tsangarides and then the management, and they nobody understood the situation. Why they went away from the metal parts, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, we had a couple of songs like Heavy Metal Hamsters, okay, but if you have a Windmill and then this, you know, I think Your Turn was also already written for Pink Bubbles. And so it was really hard, you know, a lot of discussions, and I felt these two guys wanted to go away. They talk all the time about Beatles, about the band Queen, and which I like as well, but I thought this is not clever to change it when the new guitar player is on the first album, you know.
Yeah, because you kind of get the blame in a way, because people thinking maybe you changed the band. Yeah.
So I write the metal songs, and these guys, something different, you know. Anyway, I liked the album, but it was a hard time because there was a lot of discussions and not fighting with me, but fighting with the management about why you're doing this and why you change. And then after that album, it was getting more and more in this direction, you know. Then I even started joining them. So that's why the whole Chameleon album is getting so bluesy and soft and like elements of 70s, like Revelation, isn't it?
Revelation, yeah.
From Wyke, yeah. So I like this. All it's all cool stuff, but it's definitely not Halloween style, you know. And then later we thought maybe it should be like a solo album of us three, you know, because we wrote all the songs. And,
well, I'm sorry, it's Revolution. I'm sorry.
Revolution, not
Revelations from the Dark Ride. You're getting them all confused.
Yeah.
Yes, you are, Wayne.
Anyway, this is like one step further. And I agreed, and I was fighting. I did my best, and I worked really close, especially with Mike Kiske, and because we fell in love with Stevie Ray Vaughan, and I wanted to imitate this bluesy sound. I wanted to imitate this Brian May sound. Every song sounded a bit different, you know. Mm-hmm. And then we started touring after that, and I felt like, what's going on? the fans were strange, you know.
They were just listening.
And I think we had a set of mostly from the Chameleon album and not from Keeper 1 and 2. Right. And we had a lot of acoustic songs. And I felt, oh my God, I felt a bit lost on stage, you know.
Right. And
when we went to Japan, I saw even girls crying. Not for joy. They thought, what is this band?
Yeah.
And I agree. I love the albums. I'm happy I was part of it, you know. But in that moment after the tour, it was in Japan. I said to Wyke, I think it's better to change something, or I maybe should quit, because I felt I'm the new guy in the band, and people think I'd destroy it, you know.
Right. Yeah.
And then Wyke said, no, don't leave the band. I take care of it, you know, because they talked just about Beatles' next album, even after Chameleon,
right.
More and more. I said, oh my God. So, then we lost already a record label, you know, EMI, right. And said, what are you doing?
Right, yeah.
So, so Wyke took care about it and said, okay, let's change the singer. And that's why Andy Darius came. So this is how everything started. You know.
Mm-hmm. Were you familiar with Pink Cream 69 before Andy came in?
Of course, there was a lot on MTV and radio and stuff. And yeah, I checked it out. Yeah.
But that started like an upward trajectory. I mean, you think about the four albums that came out in sequence: Master of the Ring, Time of the Oath, Better Than Raw, and Dark Ride. Wayne, admittedly, those are four of the strongest albums in the entire discography. So
yeah, that's beautiful that many people writing this, but there are a lot of people say this is my favorite album. This is my favorite Dark Ride. Some people love it as well, and for me, it's my favorite. You know, it's like a good ending. You know, everything went strange at that album. That's why it's called Dark Ride as well, and it's an honest album. It was a lot of fighting, a lot of bullshit going on, and a lot of pressure for me. The Dark Ride I wrote at the recording on the last second because they wanted to get rid of me again, and just talking. Yeah, they talked about it already. But the inspiration was not so easy, you know. But with the help of Roy, he pushed me and said, make something strong now. This should be like the main song on the album. Do something like that, a longer track with many parts and changes. And that's what I did. In 2 weeks, I did it.
Wow.
So I wrote it and then I played it to Uli first and Roy, of course.
Yeah.
And oh my God, this is amazing. You know, this is great. And then the other guys, it's okay. It's not so bad. This guy is great to me. But I'm happy that especially these four albums you mentioned.
It's just one of those albums. It's two of those albums that the fans really just, you know, they either love it or hate it. You know, I love them because they were actually the first two albums that I bought on CD, you know, because I finally got a CD player and I'm like, you know, I have the new Halloween albums, you know, and I was the coolest kid in high school back then.
You're talking about Pink Bubbles and Chameleon, right?
Yeah. So it was just, you know, those two albums are great. But I know you got another interview coming up. Do you have a little bit more time before the other interview?
What's the time?
It is 11:56.
I have it at seven o'clock. Yeah, I should be.
Well, 7 o'clock your time. So
yeah, time, yeah.
So you got time. Okay. All right. I'll let you ask some more things before we head out of here.
Yeah, still 1 hour left, I see.
All right.
Yeah. Very cool. So I know in the 90s there wasn't much touring in the United States because heavy metal was a dirty term back in the States around that time. But I did watch some of that footage of Halloween. One second. My dog wants to get out of the room. Go, puppy.
My dog is upset.
I know that Halloween had some great live concert footage from the 90s that I still love watching to this day. But there was one show that Halloween did in New York in 1998 at Coney Island High, which is unfortunately no longer there. I wanted to ask you, what were your recollections of that show in New York City?
Something I don't remember so nice. It was not a good show. I mean,
I know it was overbooked.
The problem is we had trouble on this tour in South America. I think we came from South America to New York. And that was the last show. And our gear was not stolen. It was locked at the customers.
Mm. Oh, jeez.
All my guitars were on tour. I couldn't play because I had to rent from support bands, getting every gig different guitars. And the same was happening in New York. So I got a horrible guitar somebody gave me, which is not scalloped, which is not right pickups, you know?
It's like a Squire Bullet instead of an actual Fender Stratocaster. I get it.
I remember I had in Brazil when we played, the guy gave me a silver self-painted Stratocaster. So, and the neck was loose like this. And the volume knob was like, and the live switch wasn't working. I said, oh my God, what do I get here? You know?
Panic!
This feeling on stage, and many videos are out, and people were thinking, why the band is so unstable? Sometimes we're great, sometimes not, because this was not our equipment. And I remember I was throwing the guitar like I always did, you know, at that time. This is kind of black messed up till the, you know, the spots and the light, like 3-5 meters up with a cable. And then I grabbed it again like this. And I did a couple of times. And the guy was standing next to the stage watching me like, he was not amused. He was very, very, he went to our roadie, which taking care about the situation. And he was, he has to pay for my guitar if he breaks it.
but unlike, first of all, that was a very good American accent, number one. Number two, unlike Prince, he takes care of other people's guitars and not breaks them. So,
Yeah. I saw the video when he did it. Yeah. New York. Coming back to New York. So, the cake or the ice on the cake or whatever how you call it was I got a new roadie.
Oh,
you know, a roadie is like a guy. You should trust him 100%. He's taking care about your instruments, about your equipment, the tuning.
He knows what you like. Yeah, exactly.
Should have a good guy when you pay so much, you know. And this guy was a star roadie. He worked for David Gilmour. He worked for Paul McCartney, but not for metal bands.
Oh boy!
So this guy came. Hello, I'm don't remember his name, and he came in a very nice suit, and this, and he worked. He worked so bad for me, you know.
Yeah.
I said to the management, I don't want to work with this guy. You know.
I was hoping this would have had a happy ending.
It's New York.
It's New York.
That's how I remember the show. So I think it was not the best playing or something, or the sound. I don't remember. I was not happy.
Yeah.
You're coming. That's many times I had this. You know, I have a chance to play one good show. And I remember the first time we went to South America, it was in Sao Paulo. Iron Maiden headlining and some other great bands. And we had 45,000 people. And then you go there. And my roadie, which I had before, said he worked with me, I think, the first 5 years or something. Then I had a new roadie, which was amazing. And they wanted to save some money. And he said, I'm the tour manager or stage manager. I can take care about your guitars again, you know. But he didn't know that I was down. The whole band was down-tuning half step.
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end,
what will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
I know where this is going.
He gave me a normal tuning guitar for the first song. I said, do you see this on video? When I watch this. People should sometimes read your minds, what you're thinking on stage. What the f*** is going on? just about saving money and management decisions, I was looking like a loser on stage. I felt like a loser, you know.
Managers everywhere. You cut corners, that's what you get. Okay, just letting you know that.
Now I don't have a manager. Now I don't have a roadie. So I do everything on stage alone. And it works.
But that should lead into something good. From what I heard, Master Plan is going to be going on tour with Firewind.
Yeah. Yeah. And end of February we start. I think it's for 3.5 weeks. Yeah. 19 shows first.
That's awesome. It's glad to see you back on the road again.
Yeah. Then some festivals are planning to come, and we just booked for November, like a metal cruise in Greece. We just announced it yesterday. And more stuff is coming. I think we go to South America also. Maybe I should not say it as a package with Firewind. And it's a plan. It's not booked so far, but we're planning end of next year. So we will have maybe around 50 shows this whole year. Pretty good for us.
All right. We'll love to see that come stateside, definitely.
Is there any talk about that coming to the States at all? We need something good here.
Not so far. I think we just played Proc Power in Atlanta. Yeah. Only show we had. Mm. Yeah. Yeah, it's I know Firewind announced yesterday, America. I didn't know we could join them, but the same package.
Fingers crossed. But
I didn't know about it.
But we gotta get on that.
Yeah.
What were you saying, Lou, before I cut you off? Go ahead.
No, I just want to ask him one question. I want to you start, I continue, you go, then I go, then you end. That's how it goes, Wayne.
No, I like to interrupt you instead.
Yeah, well, like, not as bad as some of our other co-hosts. I just really wanted to compliment you on your songwriting. Aside from your amazing guitar playing abilities, your songwriting was what made me gravitate towards you as a player. And I love the fact that on every album that you do, you show a different side of your writing style. Like, you could write something that's very reminiscent of early Van Halen, such as Take Me Home, to something that is just, you know, melodic and just grabs you by the heartstrings, like The Chance, or you know, any I just love the fact that you're a well-rounded guitarist. And I guess when it comes to your songwriting, when it comes to prepping for an album, do you have a set idea in mind of what you're going to go in and do? Or is it sort of, okay, I'm in writing mode, let's see what comes out?
It's not so easy to answer, to be honest.
Why do I always ask the hard questions? I'm sorry.
I think the problem is I it's not so easy to convince myself with songwriting, you know? I need always something special to feel, oh, this is different. This is cool. If I like it, doesn't mean everybody will like it, you know? But I don't want to write just songs which sounding like every other power metal song or something, you know? Because even I'm known as a power metal guitar player because I was in Halloween, and people call Masterplan power metal, which I think is not really power metal only. But right. I'm coming from totally different points, you know. My heroes, you know, like 70s style, and then later, when I was getting serious as a guitar player, I was really big in Toto, into Toto and Steve Lukather. You know, that's why you hear many parts of my solo parts are stolen from him, you know, inspired by him, and still love his style, and never met him, by the way. And but then Eddie Van Halen. Except the tapping, which I was never a really big fan. I just used it sometimes as a color, you know, as a trick, or making one note or something. But I love especially also his rhythm style, you know, and his sound always. And but when I start writing, especially on the older Masterplan stuff, I was always thinking, I never wrote a song just by guitar. I always started with a keyboard. It's weird. You know, I need something like drum part. And or I have my collection when I have my collage, you know, when I have all my ideas on some tape. Now it's in the computer. It's like a lot of stuff from the last 30 years still I have, which I never had time to start something. But when I listen, I said, you know, when you have 20, 30 ideas and only one makes it to inspire you to start making a song out of it. And sometimes I'm thinking, I like this, but I still, maybe next album, you know, I don't start before I have the feeling that's it. Now I want to do it. And for me, it's really easy to get some great ideas also from other guys and finishing it, you know. It's like Soulburn. I said to Oli, this is a great start, but it was never finished. And then I came with the ideas of the chorus and solo part, and then it was a round picture for us, and that's why we were maybe a good team. When somebody has just fragments of a song, and I feel the inspiration, you know. Right. But to inspire myself, it's not so easy. that's why it takes so long. And the last why people asking me why we're not releasing more albums the last 10 years, it's because I was really busy with my studio. I started 13-15 years ago working for many other bands, and Felt in Love was kind of mixing, mastering kind of stuff, you know. And now I'm mixing the new song for Masterplan.
Okay.
I think I will send it today to the guy who makes an animation video or lyric video for us. and this will come out in January. So you see, you're not only as a guitar player nowadays. Now I'm managing the band.
Yeah.
And I'm my own roadie on stage and booking flights for the shows. And you know, we have to do everything alone on our level. And on the other side, I'm also mixing, mastering, and recording. And so it's kind of a round job. And you know, 20, 30 years ago, I was just a guitar player and writing some songs by my mistakes.
It's funny. I guess we're going to have, me and Lou are actually in a band together called Severed Angel, and we have a new album coming out next year. That's our first album. But we're going to have, around January, we're also going to be having an animated video come out as well. So I guess we're going to have competition, Lou.
Oh, okay.
I lose. I will gladly give up the phone to Roland. I'm cool.
I don't know. We'll have to have a...
I'm not worthy.
We'll have to have an animated video off.
The first song we bring out is definitely not a typical master plan first song release, you know, because we always had this kind of more mid-tempo, more Lost and Gone and you know, Keep Your Dream Alive kind of songs. Mm. Or Back for My Life, you know.
Right.
And this is more like kind of like an anthem, bit fast, not too fast, but a bit, yeah, typical. You can sing along kind of easier. And I thought for the first time, because now we make the plan, we want more single releases before the album comes out, which is normal nowadays.
Yeah.
And maybe the second song is then a really brutal, faster, untypical master plan release as well. And I hope we make a real video for this second song, which should come out before the tour, end of February. So that's the plan. And then after the tour, the album comes.
Oh, very good. I'm glad to hear there's some new music coming, because it's been a while since the last album. So
yeah, we missed you.
Yeah, definitely. Jorn was on the first two albums on this album in Aeronautics, and then he left the band, and then he had Mike DeMeo come in the band. What was it like working with Mike?
Mike DeMeo?
Yeah.
It was... Working on the album was really easy, to be honest. Mm. I remember we talked basically mostly on internet before he came to my studio in Slovakia. And I told him maybe he can write some lyrics already, some vocal melodies. And he came with half of songs, I think 5-6 songs he did already, some work. And then he played it to me. I said, That's not what I wanted. That is too bluesy. It's too far away from our style. So we worked then very, very close in the studio and very quick. Mm-hmm. All the 10 songs, I think it was just 2 weeks. And he's very good in that. When you give him some idea and trying it out and see what's going on, and like a team playing. So he was very good. And we made it. I was lucky we made it quick, you know,
yeah.
Because then he was singing then the next couple of days. I think we were working on one song half day, and in the evening he was singing, and then we're done each song like one day. You know, it was pretty good. And I was happy. Of course, he has a different style. He's not so brutal like Jorn or Rick.
Right.
I liked him, and especially live, he was a bit even more cleaner, to be honest. Not so rough like on the album.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking a lot, and then on the end of the tour, we played in Korea, and then he was so powerful, and so I said, "You sound like totally different." Yeah, today I thought I'd give more power. I said, why do you sing always like that? I said.
This is Mike DeMeo, who was in Riot, correct?
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Can I tell you something funny? I just saw Mike DeMeo in concert recently. Guess who he was performing with?
No idea.
Do you know the blues? Not even blues. Tommy James and the Shondells. Moni, Crimson and Clover, all those songs from the 60s.
Ah, okay.
I think We're Alone Now. That was covered by Tiffany. Mike is his keyboard player now.
And singing backgrounds, of course.
Yes.
Wow. I don't know.
Yeah, that my is baby a great does the hanky panky. Yes, exactly. That stuff. It was good. It was a good concert, but I was like, no, that can't be Mike DeMeo of Sons of Society era Riot. No way. But it was.
Yeah. Yeah, but he's a cool guy. He's just, it didn't click really. It's you know, the German kind of guy is metal, power metal, and he didn't get it. He didn't understand it. I think it's also why Jorn has trouble with it. You know, he's not into this double bass fast right. songs. And we're still good friends, but also, by the way, he did Time to Be King. So we made three albums.
Yeah. But that, yeah, mentioning about the Time to Be King, like you just said, Jorn wasn't into like the fast double bass, but there was a lot of double bass stuff on there. It was a lot of crazy stuff. So why did he want to come back into the band?
For Time to Be King.
Yeah.
No, we changed a bit. He said, but I don't want this, I don't want that. And then I made a compromise and made the songs a bit more to his kind of, you know, how he liked it. I mean, not changes, like, I don't like this, and then I change it. No, but I knew he didn't like this kind of like stuff like Eagle Fly Free or something. He would not like it, you know. And he's more into this kind of bluesy.
He's into classic, the bluesy stuff,
classic rock,
like Hanky Panky. Sorry, I'm not taking anything away from his talent because it was a fun show, but it's hard to realize it's the same guy.
Hey, he's gonna make money, man.
I agree. If you're a working musician, you gotta make a living. Absolutely.
Yeah. Who knows? If somebody asked me to play in a famous pop band,
We might see Roland playing.
Roland Grappau and Tom Jones coming soon to a festival near you.
Oh, that would be awesome. I love his voice.
It's not unusual. So then Jorn ended up leaving again. So like, how did you have like a relationship with Jorn, or did that kind of get soured between all that?
We never spoke about it. He just didn't answer my messages, and we met 2-3 years later in Israel, or maybe 5 years later. And then we spoke and had fun hugging each other, drinking, and And he said, he said to me, "You know that I never left the band." Yeah, I said, "Yeah, but you never answered my messages." So that's the kind of humor we have. So he's somewhere in a nowhere land, hanging. You know.
Yeah.
What does he think he is, Ron Keel? I never got kicked out of Black Sabbath. Give me a break.
Oh, this kind of stuff. Yeah. Yeah. We're still good friends, and I asked him some months ago about some business. You know. For my solo record, some I had an offer for a record label from a label, and I asked his opinion how his experience is, you know, and he said, "Be careful." So it was a good kind of I think there was never any trouble with him, you know. He's the kind of guy. He's a lovely person, you know.
Oh yeah, like I said, at the beginning of the show, I had like almost a 4-hour conversation with him. He was just a really nice guy. He couldn't talk to me more, you know. He just wanted to keep going and going and going. So he's a very nice guy. Before we get going, I got your two solo albums. I love this album. I love both of them, but I love this one because you're actually singing on this. And I think your singing was really good. Why did you decide to stop singing?
And it didn't really stop, you know. Always had the passion. I mean, I started singing at the same time when I started playing guitar. I mean, I was inspired by Mark Farner, so he's my first kind of inspiration or idol. And I think in Rampage I also was singing, and a lot of people said they loved my voice in Hamburg. You know, at that time, nobody was singing like that.
Right.
There was just Klaus Meine from Scorpions, which is different. But I had more this kind of clean, Mark Farner bluesy kind of phrasing, soul inside, you know, and like this. Come on, everybody, we'll have a good time, yeah. This kind of stuff. And nobody's singing like this in heavy metal, you know.
Right.
But then later, of course, I met, worked with Mikey Kiske, and I was inspired of his different technique. He used a certain technique, you know. You can't sing so high without thinking about something and learning something, you know. And he was inspired by Geoff Tate and, Helford, of course. Yeah. And maybe Bruce Dickinson as well. And so I fell in love with his style as well. And I tried to learn it a bit. And I never reached the level, of course. And then I tried it on the solo album. And I thought, okay, it sounds pretty cool, but something is missing. But people should be happy that I sing, and they should be surprised. Mm. there was really, really 50-50 kind of opinions about it, you know, especially really? There was no internet. Maybe then I would read it at the same day already, like getting frustrated. But at that time was one guy, he worked for Rock Hard magazine in Germany, and he wrote, "It's a great album, but you should stop singing." that made me so frustrated that I stopped for a while. I was singing harmonies in Halloween, of course, but
right.
I said, next album, I asked Mike Vescara. That's how it started, and it made me really insecure. And if somebody tells you you have a great album, nobody was complaining about my guitar playing.
Right.
But my singing, which I was, you need self-secureness, and something breaks your self-secureness, then it's hard to get it back, you know.
Right.
And now I sing all the demo parts for our new album and to send it to Rick, and so I don't feel ashamed about it, you know. But I feel also reaction of my wife sometimes, you know. You should not sing high, sing low. I love your voice when you sing low, but I want to sing high, you know.
Sometimes these wives get you in trouble, man. They have their opinions, but you know, we know what we're doing.
but to be honest, she doesn't like any of these guys who sing in high.
Right.
Maybe, exactly. Maybe that's, she doesn't like this kind of heavy metal high singing.
Yeah, of course not. They usually don't.
I should not ask her.
And one of my favorite vocal performances of those of yours was when you did "Closer to Home," the Grand Funk Railroad song. That was one of the first songs I heard you sing, and it just blew me away. It's just awesome. I love that cover.
Yeah, we have both a live version. We played acoustic guitars on a Master of the Rings release, and we played the whole band acoustic except Uli played drums, but. And I was singing it. I wanted to release it soon. It's like a good memory.
Yeah.
So I just rescued many tapes last year. I spent many months rescuing all the live tapes from Halloween. And I thought, you know, every time we played in Hamburg was recorded by my ex-wife.
Oh,
and really? I said, why you should not release it? You know, it's like wasting to keep it just so many years in the lock.
Do you think they'll ever release that stuff?
I'd try next year, when I have more time. And but this song I maybe make over Christmas, something like that. That's not the whole concept because just the song, you know.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah,
I'm excited to hear it.
I was singing this song in a studio in Hamburg at 2-3 in the morning.
Wow.
It was the last part we did, and I was singing, not tired, but the recording engineer fell into sleep when I was singing. I said, "Wake up!" and then I, of course, I was proud coming home with the recordings and played it to my ex-wife, and she said, "Yeah, but normally you sing better."
Really? Said, "Okay." Really?
Yeah. Because it was in the studio with a lot of people watching you and stuff, and so it's kind of, you know, it's a very sensitive instrument, and. You should feel comfortable, or you should sing at home alone. It's the best. Yeah. Nowadays, you can do it, you know.
I sing in the shower, so. Yeah. Lou, you got anything else?
Yeah, is that what you call it, Wayne? Okay, yeah, never mind. Okay. No, I'm good. This was such a treat for me to be able to talk to Roland Grappau. Big fan, big lover of everything you do, and glad to see that you're back, and, you know, glad to know that you were busy with recording other artists, but... glad that we'll be able to actually hear music from you again next year.
Definitely more, yeah. Master plan. I'm also thinking about making some solo work, and I'm singing again.
Oh, yay!
Yeah. Nothing neoclassical. We don't need this anymore. We have...
Have you given up the neoclassical stuff? Like, you don't want to visit that again?
Ever? Everybody's doing it now more than before.
I don't have a... Yeah, there's nothing inside in me to say do it again. I don't. Yeah. I love to play at home, you know, playing this kind of scales. I'm still rehearsing to be able to play it, but I don't want to write these kind of songs. I want to have my style and maybe some more bluesy style, not bluesy like boring bluesy, like metal rock blues, you know, this kind of stuff. Yeah. Let's see. I'm not easy to convince myself. I told you, but it's like, I told you both. It's something I'm searching now, right now. What can I do? Like King's X or something, you know, this kind of style.
Mm-hmm.
This kind of great guitar sound I like as well. So something I will find, you know. I have a lot of songs already left, which we're not using for Master Plan, and I don't want to keep people waiting so much again, you know, like 10 years.
Yeah, it's been too long. So do you still have contact with Uli? Because he left the band as well. So do you still talk to him?
We have the last 10 years we're writing messages. And I met him in, that's already 1 year ago in Norway. We played, I think my battery was empty. And, we have recently contact always like, twice a month we're writing messages, something like that.
Yeah.
Fine. He's having his job in Norway, and I think he's happy with everything. Mm.
Did he like completely stop drumming? Because I haven't seen him do anything.
I think he's the kind of guy, he's drumming for 1 year, not at all. Mm. And then he comes back 2-3 rehearsals and he's great again.
Yeah.
He's amazing. He did the same in Halloween. After touring, he stopped playing for 6 months.
Really?
And I said, how is it possible?
And, he's just that good.
Like picking up a bike.
I think when you get some offer from some bands, he's doing studio work or something like that. Yeah. Mm.
Very cool, very cool. Just a few more things. Was there a name for the band before? Because I remember you had a contest to name the band Master Plan. Was there a name that you guys had in mind before somebody picked that?
No, there was a long search. I remember 3-6 months searching for name, and I had a list of 100 names, and there was nothing I remember now, but the idea came from some guy from Mexico, a fan who wrote me private and said,
yeah,
you know, you're master musicians and you have your future and you know in front of you now. Why you don't call yourself Master Plan? And I said, mm-hmm. And I asked Uli, what do you think about it? And he loved it. Yeah, so that's why. So easy, you know, some fan helped us to find the name.
Yeah, it fits perfectly. And speaking of fans, I actually have a couple of fan questions. There's just one guy asked me some questions he wanted to know from you. This is from Hiro Morita. He said the live DVD just came out with the bonus disc for the 20th anniversary of the debut album. Is there any more pro shot videos from the 2003 tour?
No.
No.
Okay. There's some stuff. It's in Japan. We had some one or two concerts recorded, but the audio material is so bad that I don't want to post it. Yeah. It's good video quality, but there are a couple of mistakes. I don't want to show this, you know.
Yeah.
I did on YouTube one little part. It's a bass and drum solo. I posted that. People can find it down under my name there. But I don't want to have unfixed material. We have also from Aeronautics to a really good material, but it's also not fixable because it's no audio extra material.
Jeez. Did you have Jorn sing the chants at all during any of those tours? That's what he wanted to know if it was going to be on any.
There was in Japan. We made a medley of 3 songs.
Okay.
And he was singing the chants like 1 minute. Not the whole.
Not the whole thing. Yeah. And is there any, we just talked about this, any plan to release the Aeronautics 20th anniversary?
For me, it's not really 100% sure, because I think the first album was special for me because it has this video material. Mm. And I thought it's not fair to my lineup now to release a DVD for the fans and saying, here, this is Jorn, this is Uli. And I think that makes only sense to say it's part of the anniversary.
Mm.
And people can see something special, how the band started.
Right.
And bringing all the anniversaries after 20 years now, I think it looks like a money-grabbing kind of idea, which I think the band doesn't see any money, but it's a record label, you know. And but it's, for me, it was just a wish to release a video, and I just put the idea together with the first album anniversary. That's all it is.
Good answer. Because a lot of bands, like, they want that cash grab, but, you know, it doesn't hurt to get the cash, you know.
I don't mind if they bring this vinyl again. They did already Aeronautics, but MK2 was never a vinyl, as far as I remember.
Mm.
And people still ask him when it's coming out, and I think it will come out sooner or later, but AFM is, always busy with other stuff.
Yeah. And his last question is, he heard that we talked about this, about a new album coming out. Is it going to include any songs like Heroes or Wounds or anything?
yeah, not a copy of them or something like that, but some, yeah, 2-3 songs we have kind of this direction. Yeah.
Maybe. Well, is there a name for the album yet?
Not really. I was thinking about, you know, this kind of metamorphose or metalmorphose, something like that, you know. I just wanted to make something special. First, I had the idea to continue with this kind of four elements we had started in the beginning. Mm. But nah, I should not do this, you know. But there were a lot of this, like, air, and the first one was all the four elements.
Right.
Then I thought about water and this, you know, earth, and nah, yeah, it's over. It's a different lineup, so we should continue with what we have and make just nice, fun records without thinking so much about the first two albums, you know.
Yeah.
Because everybody says it's the best. It's the best. It's not. It's not. It's some statements and on some special time we had. You know, we had a lot of kind of anger and disappointment feelings, which has helped us to write some really crazy, crazy good material. You know, sometimes help. You know, but now we have different situation and different lineup.
Yeah. Yeah,
we do what we do.
Yep. So, Master Plan 20th anniversary. Do you have a favorite song off of this album, or you just like them all the same? Is there one that you like really loved the most?
That's like asking him to pick his favorite.
I know,
child,
I know, it's
man.
Hard, but
come
like,
on,
it's tough, man. It's an awesome album. It's got to be like that one song.
If you ask me, I mean, there's Soul, and there's Spirit Never Dies, there's Crawling, there's Kind Hearted Light. There's so many good songs.
There is,
you know, I'm proud about every song on this album. It's funny. It's really fun.
Yeah. Well, Roland, thank you very much for coming on the show. I really enjoyed this. I actually asked you to come on the show maybe like 2 years ago, but we just couldn't find the time. But I'm glad we finally did get the time, because you're one of my favorite guitar players, and you were in one of my favorite bands, and now you got the Master Plan.
Thank you.
And
Roland,
where are you going?
Roland.
They going to the bathroom?
No, I think he thinks the interview's over. And he's gone.
I don't think he left.
He's gone.
I don't know. Well, that was
it's live, ladies and gentlemen. You have to expect this.
Well, thanks, Roland, for coming on the show. And yeah, he went to go to his next interview. But thank you for watching the show. Everybody, please hit that subscribe button. And we also started something now. I don't know if I can get rid of him or what. I don't know. We'll let him stay in case he comes
back. Oh, now you want to get rid of him.
Yeah, no, okay, maybe he comes back. But now we have this thing going on. I don't know. Just stay tuned, because there's going to be these tiers that we have. You can join the chats, and you can be like the special person in the chat, and we can like acknowledge you in the chats, or you can like suggest us to do certain album versus albums, or just about a band, or whatever show you want to do. And you can also join us on a show.
That's right, we're monetized, bitches.
Yep, so check it out. I don't know where it is on this YouTube thing, but look, and it'll be there somewhere. And
we're still figuring it out ourselves.
Yeah, it's brand new to us, so it's on there somewhere. So if you want to have a little bit more fun with the show and want to be more involved with us, then please, you know, take advantage of that. And again, thanks, Roland, for coming on the show. Go check out the new 20th anniversary of the debut Master Plan album. It's going to be really cool. You're going to love it. And that's it.
Yep. And also, don't forget, go to severedangel.com, buy a copy of the album. Merch is on sale at 40% off until November 28th. So buy our stuff.
That's right. Buy our stuff, because we need the money. We have another album coming out. We have to pay for it, so you have to help us. Join me tonight at 10 p.m. Eastern. I will be on freeworld.fm. And I'm going to be doing... Roland's back. He entered the room. Hold on. Hold on. Don't go anywhere. Don't go anywhere. Something happened. Oh, maybe he left again.
Well,
no, here he is.
Wayne, you disappoint me. Anyways.
I disappoint you.
Where is he?
He's coming. He's, I don't know. What happened?
Everything okay? We were trying to say goodbye to you. You just took off.
Did you have to go to the bathroom? What was that?
He went off again.
Sorry. Yeah, I think you talked, you're one of my favorite guitar players, and then my mobile went off.
Yeah, oh, all right. All of a sudden, we saw you taking over and running. But that's the end of the show. Go charge your phone, and you got another interview.
Roland, thank you so much for coming on the show, and best wishes to you. See you soon, hopefully.
Thank you very much.
Yes. All right. And take care. And everybody, please subscribe and go buy the Master Plan debut album, 20th anniversary. And we will see you guys next week.